opinions you can trust.
Hey, this is Philip Seymour Hoffman, and you're listening to Celluloid Heroes Radio.
Hello, and welcome to Celluloid Heroes. I'm Edward Pryor.
And I'm Jack Pelling.
Yeah, we don't usually give our surnames, so you can now Facebook that.
Google me. Yeah. No, don't Facebook me.
No.
I won't accept anyway. What's the date today? The 8th of June.
Yeah, it is
2011. Another sort of quite quiet week. I suppose there's two. What's the big film? I suppose Kung Fu Panda 2.
Kung Fu Panda 2.
Big sort of blockbuster animation sequel. What else have we got?
I saw Last Night, which is sort of almost closer to.
It's taken a while for that to come out in this country.
Actually. Well, no, what happened? I looked back and said 2010. It came out. They gave the release date when it was in the Times Film Festival.
Oh, right.
So it came out at the same time in America.
Sure. Because anyone would think that it would be really bad to have waited that long.
Until I saw it.
Well, let's hear about more about that later. I've also got a film called Point Blank, which is a new French film from the guy who made things like Poor Elle, which that you saw the remake of last year. I haven't seen it.
Yeah.
In the next 3 days.
Yeah.
So we'll start at the logical point, which is the beginning.
Yeah, and this is the first time we've done this because we've recently been...
Oh yeah, we should probably say that we, ever since the incarnation of the show, we've always played music, but it's becoming more and more of a sort of litigious struggle in terms of copyright violations, and seeing as most people listen to the iTunes version, which doesn't have the music in, we thought we'd save ourselves the bother and stop doing it. But, you know, if you make a real fuss, maybe we'll change our mind.
Yeah.
But it has to be a real fuss.
Yeah, you really do have to
exactly.
come around knocking on the door.
So we'll start this week with Kung Fu Panda 2. I actually watched Kung Fu Panda 1.
Oh, you
before.
Did in the end?
Yeah, because I had an hour and a half to spare before I went to and see it. So I thought to give it a little bit of context, I'd rattle through it because you saw it last year.
Yeah, and I said Dustin Hoffman was very funny in it.
He is. It's a shame that he you could barely say that he's in it in this one.
I know, that's what I thought.
And so change of director as well. It's now Jennifer Yu, who was an animator on the first one. And it seems to be a bit of a tradition nowadays that they promote
it's a stepping stone
animators
in the animation world,
you know, that's
it?
What they do in Pixar, and now DreamWorks are following suit. So we have the a lot of the original cast back. We have Jack Black, Dustin Hoffman, barely, Angelina Jolie, Gary Oldman, and...
well, Gary Oldman wasn't in the first.
So Gary Oldman is the new bad guy who is a... what are they called?
Peacock.
Can't even remember. Peacock.
He's an albino peacock.
He's an albino peacock called Lord Shen.
Okay.
So it starts with another, I don't know if you remember how the first one started, but another beautiful piece of sort of quite traditional animation that gives you a bit of backstory.
Yeah.
I also did a montage count because I think there are 8 montages in Kung Fu Panda 1.
Yeah.
So let's see if this can beat it. So we start with one of sort of the story so far. And we do get a lot more of this sort of traditional, very Asian style animation, which is very cool. Mm. And so, we have this big sort of opening fight scene, as you might imagine. And as with the first one, it's very much made by people who obviously have a passion for animation and have a love for the art form, because, you know, it's quite adult animation for sort of, you know, children's, essentially a children's stroke family film and stuff. And so the basic plot is that Po, our hero, the panda, now that he's been
Jack
accepted
Black.
Into the... dragon, he's the dragon warrior. The first film was all about him, you know, picking up the mantle of being the chosen one, and this one is about him, his quest to find inner peace to become, you know, an extra good kung fu-ing panda,
dragon
I suppose.
Warrior.
And so it's a little bit more indulgent in things like the fight scenes, and you know, the first one was quite sweet. I mean, you said, described it as sort of above average. Family animation fair.
Yeah.
I thought it was quite far above that.
Okay, fair.
I mean, I thought it was way better than sort of Despicable Me and stuff, because it actually had a proper script that with
but
you know,
I call them average,
nicely
Despicable
written gags
Me.
And stuff. Yeah, oh, yeah, yeah. They're very
so,
okay.
Kung Fu Panda
so
above
is
that.
Above average. Yeah. All right, fair enough. But it's still not quite up there with the Pixar stuff. But you know what is? I mean, I'm sure they get very upset with people keep comparing them. So we have a few more people on board voice wise, which is quite exciting. We have Dennis Haysbert, who people will know mainly as President Palmer in 24, but he's basically doing the deep growly black guy voice that was done by Clark Duncan.
Michael Clark
Duncan in the first one. We also have Jean-Claude Van Damme.
Oh, yeah?
And Jean-Claude Van Damme has trois lines. he really doesn't do much at all. And also Michelle Yeoh, who is in all of those things. So we follow them on the quest for inner peace.
Also
there's
a
bit of backstory about... If you were confused by the how a panda could be the son of a goose in the first one, that a little bit of this backstory is explained.
Yeah.
So maybe all's not what it seems in the Kung Fu Panda household. And maybe that has some links to Gary Oldman with everything that's happened in the past is done in the old school 2D animation.
Yeah.
Incidentally, this is 3D, but it was a press screening that I went to and it didn't. It was actually in 2D.
Okay.
So I think just people have given up with it, really.
Yeah, but saying
but
that,
from what I've heard and from the figures in America, because I think this has been out for a couple of weeks in America, mm-hmm. I think it's carrying on the trend, because Pirates of the Caribbean 4 was 70-30 2D to 3D.
Okay.
So Hollywood is starting to get a little bit nervous, and I think Kung Fu Panda's done about the same numbers. So people are sort of rejecting it, I think. So Gary Oldman does a very sort of camp tenor in his performance. He's very posh. There's a hint of Peter Ustinov in Robin Hood. That sort of, oh, my boy, sort of bit of that, bit of Uncle Monty. And he's great.
Yeah, I'm sure.
The jokes aren't really as strong as they were first time round. And the sort of dynamic of the group. I mean, the Angelina Jolie character, the tigress.
There's a lot of jealousy.
She's supposed to be about like spiky and stuff. Now she's like... she doesn't really know what she is. She's a bit of a nothing character.
Mm.
And getting Angelina Jolie to do this part, and I mean, it must cost an incredible amount of money, but it could be anyone.
Mm.
It really could be. And she doesn't have that much to do, you know. Hans Zimmer's score is as good as ever. And at the end of the day, it's really just more of the same. It's not as funny or as like cute as the first one. It's got longer fight scenes. It looks a little bit more polished. There's a bit of that thing I hate of sort of adult gags. There's a very sort of Terminator homage that sticks out like a sore thumb out of nowhere, really. Mm. And it sags a little bit in the middle, but it really does pick up at the end, and it's well directed. It moved nicely. It's one of those films that's shot, those animated films that are shot in a way that... a more conventional shot would, like live action thing would be shot. So a trick that you would use in live action to get around the fact that you can't do what you're doing, they would borrow to give it a sort of sense of realism. So an example of it would be a long tall house. Someone falls down the stairs at the top of the house and the camera sort of jolts down as they bump, diagonally down the stairs, and then eventually they roll out of the door. So that, I mean, that is quite nicely directed in that. There's a strong, connection sort of story-wise to the Star Wars original trilogy. So the first one is about, the guy who is, has this incredible pressure of being a chosen one who has to step up to the mantle. This is him sort of coming into his own and also discovering his backstory. There's also a bit that's straight out of the Dantooine swamp scene with Yoda, where he is told about his destiny and how he's got to pick up the mantle.
Is that with Dustin Hoffman?
No, this is with a goat who's a soothsayer, who is played by Michelle Yeoh, which she does quite well. She's obviously just plonked in there so people won't accuse it of being racist, basically.
Yeah, but Jackie's in there.
Jackie Chan's in there, yeah. Jackie Chan's in there, and so is who? David Cross is really great as the crane.
Yeah, I really like him.
Yeah, I mean, he's a really good voice actor. He's got a very sort of comic timbre, which works very well. But is it as good as the first one? Probably not.
No.
But it's fine. It's still above average. And Jack Black gives a good sort of comic performance. It's just a little bit underwritten, and it's not really funny enough.
No.
But it's
there's going to be more.
It's still worth 5 Despicable Me's.
Yeah. Great.
And apparently, you were saying that they
Yeah, they sort of planned storyboard. Yeah, they storyboarded potential six.
Okay, well, they're going to run out of steam pretty soon, unless they just follow the Star Wars thing exactly. And then they got six films they can do.
As long as they kill off
the last three, will be terrible.
Yeah.
Well, Angelina Jolie, funnily enough, her character in this is just smacks of someone who's not going to make it through.
Yeah.
I won't say whether she does or not. But yeah, you know, if you're aware of any sort of, you know, narrative plot devices, then you'll see it coming. I'm not saying it actually happens, but
no.
So yeah, basically that's enough on that, really.
Okay.
So why don't that's you good. Tell us and the listeners at home about a little bit about last night?
Well,
the film last night.
The film last
not
night.
What you did? Last night.
What I actually did last night was watch Prom.
Okay. Well, don't.
And
do
I'll tell you about
last, till later.
My last night a little later in the show. But two nights ago, I went to see Last Night, which is basically, it's an adult-themed film about relationships and about marriage. I mean, very similar comparisons to the film Closer.
Okay.
But, I mean, I know you didn't like Closer, did you?
It's not that I didn't really like the film. I didn't like the people in it. I didn't care about them. They're all just such dicks. I just wanted them all to go away.
Yeah. Well, did you think the characters were dicks?
It was very overly dramatic as well. You know,
it was make slightly, a big but that's Nichols.
Yeah. Mike Nichols. Well, Mike Nichols is director. And also because it's a play, you know, there's more emphasis on
dialogue. And I must say, I mean, this wasn't a play.
Okay.
But it could well have been. I think this. It's written and directed by Massey, and she probably changed her name for my misfortune. But Tad Jeden.
Yeah.
She wrote and directed it. She hasn't a first time director.
Mm-hmm.
And there's nothing wrong about directing, but she has written a couple of films before. One I hadn't heard of, and the other one's called The Jacket with Adrian Brody.
Okay.
I think
yeah,
it was
yeah,
his first film. After he won his Oscar, whether he filmed it before he won, I don't know. And that also had Keira
Knightley. Teetering on the edge of his huge decline in standard.
He'd got to Hillary's step.
Yeah.
And he was about to fall down. And, you know, I don't know where you go from writing a psychotic sort of weird thriller to writing an adult-themed piece about relationships. She did it terribly badly. I like The Jacket. This is terrible. I'll come into it. So you've got Michael and Joanna, played by Sam Worthington and Keira Knightley, and they're married. They're young married. I'd say they're supposed to be playing maybe 30-year-olds just got married, maybe 28, so late 20s.
So they're their age, pretty much.
Yeah, they're basically their age. The young married couple. She's a writer. She's written a book, but she's writing for a magazine while she kind of finds herself. And he works for sort of like an architectural company, really. Some sort of commercial property.
Okay.
And the first scene is them sort of getting ready for an evening.
Mm-hmm.
And just like, have you got the wine? Get the wine. Oh, and like they're getting ready quickly and they get into a taxi and they sort of talk a bit, but not much. They get out of the taxi. It's like, oh, get the wine. You've got the wine. It's like, runs off the taxi, gets the wine. Comes back and a little kiss.
Getting on well?
Yeah, they're getting on very well. And they go into this party, and it turns out it's like Michael's boss's party.
Mm-hmm.
He goes around, and Joanna knows most of the people there. He knows the boss. It's all, you know, they all know each other. It's just one of those lovely, and this is all set in New York. Yeah.
Okay. But she's English,
he's
Australian.
He's Australian.
Okay.
And the other two people prop up, one's Latino-American, Eva Mendes.
Yeah.
But I'm sure she's American.
Yeah.
And the other one is French. So it's like a very sort of long-winded joke, you know. An Australian, an Englishman, a Frenchman and a Latino go to New York.
Yeah.
One says
and
the
then
other.
That's where it...
yeah, there's no real punchline. There's no real plot. So anyway, they go in, have a little chat, and after a while... Michael introduces Joanna to Eva Mendes, Laura, who's been working for them the last 3 months.
Okay.
And it's like, this is Laura? And like Joanna's like, why have you not told me that Laura is a spitting image of Eva Mendes? You know, ridiculously attractive. I mean, surely you'd mention that. And she's got so jealous. It's like,
Seen Training Day?
was she the person you went to LA with? And she's like, what's wrong, babes? You know, it's like, and you're going to Philadelphia with her tomorrow? It's like, It's like, and you've never told me about this. So she's really threatening out.
So she's got a bit of the green-eyed monster on the go.
Yeah. It's a bit of subtext. She smokes a cigarette.
Okay.
I haven't spoken one for these ages. Oh, right.
How
you really are stressed. Yeah. has a few glasses of wine. She drinks a lot in this
really?
Film. Which sort of suggests, sort of answers a lot of questions, really,
yeah,
as
yeah.
you go on. So So they sort of end on a, she sleeps on the sofa that night, they're having an argument, and then, you know, halfway through the night, he's like, come on, babes, I'll whip you up some scrambled eggs at like 3 a.m. Yeah. It's like, you wouldn't do this. You know, you're drunk, you've had a few drinks, you're about to go on a business trip, you need your sleep.
Yeah.
This doesn't happen. anyway, they do it, and then the next day they go, he goes to Philadelphia, and that's that. So he goes to Philadelphia. She then goes, starts writing, she goes to the cafe, and as she's coming out her cafe, where she gets her coffee and probably some sort of bagel, because they're in New York, and as she walks out, Alex is standing in front of her, the Frenchman, and Alex is played by Guillaume Cornet, who is in lots of French films and a few sort of films, and it was so recognisable. I was like, where have I seen you? And I didn't click. I had to go on IMDb.
Yeah.
And he's...
Well,
he's,
did in a way.
Yeah, I
click
my fingers.
Of a mouse.
I click on my mouse and I just click my fingers. It's the French guy from The Beach, if anyone's wondering.
Okay. So he's in quite a lot of stuff
as well. And he's very attractive.
Yeah.
He's very chiselled. And he's a really nice... He's got that great sort of nice guy screen presence. Sort of thing, you know? He's got a real likability factor. And anyway, Alex, like, Alex, I haven't seen you in ages. Oh, it's like, how long are you in here for? Like, well, I'm leaving tomorrow. Turns out that Alex is one of her previous loves. You find out in like a sentence that Michael and Joanna, they've been out since uni. They met at college. They went out for 3 years. They broke up for like a year, and then they went back together and got married. And within that little breakup in a year, when Joanna was in Paris, she met Alex. And they fell in love. And she's never told Michael about Alex.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I can sort of see where this is going.
So this is going. So basically, so they were like, let's go out. Let's go out and have a supper and have drinks. And Alex is trying desperately. Alex has basically never stopped fell out of love with her. Never fell out of love with her. She's never told the truth to Michael. Michael's in Philadelphia with someone he does find attractive. But he wants to be faithful. Eva Mendes or Laura doesn't really help. I mean, God, you wish people were acting like that in real life. you really would. So he's got to deal with temptation and staying in a hotel with Philadelphia, and she's got to hold out temptation when she's in New York with her old boyfriend.
Okay.
And then that's it. So you're going back and forth from Philadelphia to New York, what's going on? And I imagine when Massey wrote this, it was about 50-50 going back and forth.
Yeah.
Due to Sam Worthington's, well, pretty terrible acting.
Yeah.
I mean, he really can't string a couple of sentences together.
I mean, how he sort of has landed some of the roles he got. I mean, he doesn't really have to do much acting, I suppose. That's probably why.
Well, that's it.
He's perfect.
He's perfect for CGI.
Yeah.
Massey didn't sort of grab onto that factor.
Yeah.
So it's about 80% Kira, 20% Sam. And it's, I mean, it's pretty bad. I mean, I went to see it with a couple.
Okay.
To see if they'd enjoy it, because, you know, it'll be a nice sort of demographic.
Go
in with an actual couple. And the girl came out of it saying, oh, I quite liked it.
Mm-hmm.
And the boy was like, oh, it's rubbish. Absolute rubbish. And he whispered to me halfway through the film, I was like, this is dreadful. I was like, I'm trying to make my own mind up here, mate. Don't need you getting in my way.
Yeah.
But
so would you think it is one for the ladies? Do you think that case study worked?
Sort of. Maybe, yeah. I mean, they'll enjoy it more. They also came into it saying Kira's supposed to really excel in this film. I didn't think she excelled at all. I didn't think she was bad in it. But she said it wasn't great. But when you're stepping up next to Sam Worthington...
Exactly.
You're going to look pretty good.
Hot.
Yeah.
Property.
You're going to look like a nominated actress, at least. I think, obviously, the comparison's closer. I didn't like necessarily the characters in it, but I liked the acting.
I mean, these actors don't really have the same... They're not the same calibre, really.
They're not. Not at all. Kira might become like a, you know... She'll always be a sort of like leading actress.
I think she's got a lot better recently.
Yeah, and she'll continue getting better. I think she's getting better because she's doing a lot more stage.
She's knocked Pirates on the Caribbean on the head as well. Which,
yeah, that's great. So you can put that aside. In fact, she's been doing a lot of stage
acting. She's very good in Atonement.
Yeah, she's very good in Atonement.
And The Duchess, she's good in.
Yeah, she's good. You know, those are right up her street. Yeah. This is slightly different. She's like putting on a London accent on this rather than a sort of posh.
She can also be quite whiny and middle class and annoying. Like,
Yeah, well, she doesn't do that.
Spoilt bratty, is it?
Yeah, she's not spoilt bratty in this. She's like her own woman. She really is a modern lady, or modern woman.
Mm.
Modern girl. I don't know you modern girls, like what you like to be called as.
Yeah.
Unless it's this Jermaine Greer's. Is it Jermaine Greer's?
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm sure they don't want to be called that. They drink a lot of vodka in it. I mean, she gets through about a bottle of vodka in a night.
Okay.
So I don't know why there's a scene of her just puking into a bin. But
really hungover in the morning.
Yeah, exactly. Or maybe they left that in the edit for. And I was sort of watching it thinking, okay, well, half the film, or at least three quarters of the film, is going to be about the sort of that night. And then the next, you know, the last third of the film is going to be the complete argument. And that's where the real sort of nuance of the modern relationship comes, is how you deal with an affair. But that's not that. The last scene, they get back together, and then...
Oh, right. Thanks a lot. Props for the prior.
No, it's not Spot for the prior, because it's about last night. I probably assumed it was called Last Night and then the bit of the next day. But it's just called Last Night, so I'm not spoiling anything.
Well.
All right?
Never mind.
But, I thought it was pretty dreary. I didn't really care for the characters, but obviously was, because it's a film about are they, aren't they, come on, just tell me, and then I can leave. So... Not good, by nowhere near as good as Close End. If you watch Close End, you will want to watch this because they're very similar styles. And you'll watch it and you might think it's good. You certainly won't think it's good as Closer.
Okay.
And, Miramax.
Yeah.
Miramax comes up and you see that city.
It's very Miramax-y thing.
Yeah, it's just sort of set in that city.
It sounds also it might have quite a lot in common, or trying to have a lot in common with things like interiors and like the... like the serious Woody Allen relationship pieces that he did in the 80s, but I'm not sure if you've seen Interiors.
No, I haven't seen any of those. And if it does,
nothing like it, but it sounds like that's, there's always writers and, in the liberal, like young intelligentsia's problems. But anyway.
Well, anyway, I thought it was very dull.
Okay, well, we'll crack on with the rest of our reviews later. We've still got Point Break to come. And Prom as well, which I'm very much looking forward to. We'll read out a couple of your favourite Prom films as well. And we'll open up an argument that I've been having this morning. So hopefully we'll get a little bit of closure there.
Yeah.
But for now, it's time for the movie news.
This is the news.
Surrounding film.
Okay, movie news time. The couple of new trailers, which we'll talk about later. Have you got any news to talk about?
I've done really badly. I've got two trailers. One I haven't seen.
Okay.
And one that we've both seen. So we'll get on to that later.
Well, in terms of news, we've got Darren Aronofsky's talked a little bit about his next project. And if I gave you a week to try and guess which story he's doing, in his words, an edgy retelling of, then you would not get it. It's Noah's Ark.
I wouldn't have got it.
So that's a bit weird.
Edgy
I can't
retelling.
Really sort of, imagine him being a big sort of creationist, but we'll see. I mean, whatever he does, I'm sure he'll do an interesting job of it, whatever.
Sure. Yeah.
Terminator 5, more about some casting news for that. Arnie's role's been scaled down to a small cameo as he's now dealing with his love child.
And which, if you haven't seen the pictures,
string of infidelities.
Definitely go and try and
get it. Is there a picture of it?
Oh, yeah.
It. Yeah, the child.
Yeah, and it looks ridiculous. It's like mini Arnie.
Really? Has it got like sort of massive muscles and stuff?
Yeah, it's got a massive chin and it really does look like Arnie. It's unreal.
Well, guess who is at the moment connected with the role of John Connor?
Sam Washington.
I'll give you a clue. He's an absolutely terrible actor.
Sam
and
Worthington.
No. It's of Fast Five fame.
Vin Diesel.
No.
Oh, Paul Walker.
Paul Walker. Ah. That's the one. He's
a perfect John Connor. I think he's probably been...
So? I think he's drab enough to be franchise has now become.
His I think 80% of his names and films are O'Connor.
Yeah, exactly.
O'Connor.
He's actually called just Connor. He's not O'Connor.
Okay, well, O'Connor in other films.
But anyway, moving on. Knocked Up. I can't remember. Did we disagree on Knocked Up?
I thought it was all right. You don't like it.
Yeah. It's not by any means the worst of that lot.
No.
I'd take it over The Hangover any day. But they're doing a spin-off of that. Judd Apatow has... I don't really know how that works, but...
Was it one of the characters?
Anyway, starring Chris O'Dowd, who's really starting to make his name in this in the Judd Apatow movies now. He's doing Bridesmaids. If you don't know who Chris O'Dowd is, he is the Irish guy from the IT crowd and stuff like that. But he seems to be, you know, getting... fingers in a few pies in Hollywood.
Yeah, I think it's great.
And this is exciting for you Greengrass fans. It's been a while since Paul Greengrass has done anything. 2 years since Green Zone, is it? It was last year, actually, maybe.
Yeah,
it was but he is working on a feature about pirates. I assume that is Somali pirates. Rather than him doing Pirates of the Caribbean 5.
Are they going to black up Matt Damon, or has he got to get someone else?
I don't know. Apparently, it also involves Navy SEALs, so I'm sure that he will be...
Matt the Navy SEAL. Yeah.
He's pretty much worked his way through every battalion and platoon that the US has got to
offer. But it's great. It's a great partnership those two have. I'd love to see it continue.
Okay. Well, let's do some trailer trash. I've got a jingle.
Whack it on.
This is Trailer Trash.
Yeah, I tried to do a sort of provincial radio station jingle.
Like traffic report and all that.
Exactly. Great. Come and buy some double glazed windows. trailers, what have you got for me?
Well, this is the one you originally told me about, and I saw on my source, the movie Boxnet.
The special source.
/ trailers. And it's The Guard.
Okay, yeah.
Which we'll hopefully be seeing in Edinburgh.
Yeah, well, at least one of us will be. Mm. We'll have to draw straws for it.
The 9:30 in the morning
kick-off. Yeah. I think it looks really good, actually.
It looks brilliant.
Do you want to explain...
Yeah, it was a local town in Ireland where they still speak Gaelic, really, most of them. The murder investigation unit is headed by Brendan Gleeson's character. Yeah. He's a bit sort of backward.
Let's say, yeah, at best, they're sort of quite old-fashioned.
Yeah, at best.
And so chaos ensues when hotshot FBI maverick Don Cheadle comes.
Yeah.
Cue lots of sort of jokes about culture clashes between sleepy Irish towns and, you know, African-American hotshots in, you know, wherever he's from.
In America.
New York.
Yeah.
Not Langley, as he says in the trailer.
Yeah. And Mark Strong plays a villain, which is always fun.
Yeah. He's been, by Mark Strong's standards, he's actually been away for quite a while.
Yeah.
It's been at least 3 weeks.
I know, what's going on?
Yeah.
But he'll be back.
Not since The Eagle, I think.
Yeah. That looks great. And it's from the guys who did In Bruges, which I just love In Bruges.
I like In Bruges, yeah.
So there we are. So that's The Guard. And the other one I've written down here, I dared myself to watch the trailer, and I wimped out. It's called The Vow, and it's got Rachel McAdams and Channing Tatum, and I suggest it's like a romantic drama.
Yeah, good old Channing.
So there we are.
Okay. I've got a couple for you.
Okay.
This one is hot off the press. It came out at about 5 o'clock today. This is the Inbetweeners movie.
Ah, it's
teaser
out.
Trailer, yeah.
Oh, crazy.
It doesn't show too much apart from the fact that they are in Malaga. And it's shot on 35mm instead of, you know, E4.
Yeah.
It ends with a, remember to bring your swimming trunks because you're going to be knee-deep in clunge. Is that a genuine laugh?
No, it's a laugh at, good. At. An ironic, I'm loving at them.
Ironic laugh.
I
think that that's one of their sort of catchphrases.
Yeah.
I mean, all my mates really like it. It's not that I don't like it, I just don't get it. Really did persevere with it as well. It's just like...
I don't know what they like, whether they like the sort of concept or they just generally like Simon Bird.
I think they just like the way that it actually is quite true to what it's, you know, like to be that sort of age.
It's slightly true. I mean...
Well, I can see that side of it. It's just like, but, you know, we weren't really that funny then. Like, we thought we were.
Yeah, but we weren't. Simon Bird, he's quite funny. But I think for me, he sort of over-eggs his sort of partridge-ness.
Sure. If they do something a little bit more serious, you know, and have a few... I mean, what this is in danger of falling into the big trap of is, you know, just getting plot, you know, being too used to writing 22 minutes of plot as opposed to 92 minutes
sort of
plot.
Kevin and Perry Go Large syndrome.
Ali G in the House. I had another argument with someone this week about Ali G in the House. It's so weird that you find people under rocks somewhere that look quite like it. Anyway, there is also a new film by John Carpenter.
Ooh.
The legendary John Carpenter, as it says in the trailer. And it's called The Ward.
The Ward.
And it does pretty much what you would expect a John Carpenter film to do.
Sort of mental institution.
Exactly, yeah. Psychological horror, sort of like. But it looks sort of like it might sort of verge into a bit of slasher every now and then. Who knows? There's also a trailer for a new film called Sarah's Key, starring Christian Scott Thomas, and she is sort of an investigative journalist trying to find out the story of Sarah, who was a little girl in the Holocaust.
I saw Four Weddings and a Funeral Again. I actually had a weird sort of hungover movie marathon on Saturday. I just didn't move. I got my parents went on holiday to Egypt and got one of those all-in-one sort of dresses, which all the men wear.
Okay.
And when if I have a hungover Saturday, I just slip
you
it on.
You sit there in a dress.
I slip it on. Yeah,
it's like a Homer Simpson, like a fat when man gets suit. Really
yeah,
fat.
Yeah, but it's not flowery. It's just white.
Yeah.
And I just lay it on the sofa. No cap. No. But it's got one pocket. And I just lay there on the sofa and just watch film after film, or just snippets of film in 20 minutes here, 20 minutes there. Started with Toy Story 3, which is on the Disney Channel, which is great.
Oh, right.
But,
Do you pay? That's quite expensive, Disney Channel.
No. I think it comes with the movies.
It comes with the movies.
Yeah, it's a great... If you're not aware of how good the Disney Cine Channel is, it's fantastic.
It's all just Pixar films, isn't it?
It's all Pixar films. And when it's not Pixar films, it's classic Disney, Robin Hood, Lion King. They show a great film every day. Mm. It sort of really does sort of celebrate Disney. But moving away, I saw Four Weddings.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to drill on about how bad Andy McDowell is and acting, because everyone does. But Carrie, her character, she's a whore. I mean, she really is.
I know. That's...
She's absolutely terrible. Why would anyone want to go out? She's malicious. She's disgusting. Yeah. And Kristen Scott Thomas every time.
Exactly. Just because she's...
And she's bloody loaded. She's like...
Just because her wrinkles are all gone.
I know, yeah. And she's got castle, for God's sake. Yeah.
Yeah.
And your best mate would be your brother-in-law. You made a mistake there.
You wouldn't go for duck face then?
Never duck face, but she gets it hard.
Well,
so I feel sorry.
Yeah.
So I'm a bit sorry for her.
Fair enough. Okay, well, that's about wraps it up for the movie news this week. It's time for the competition. Card.
Okay, it's competition time. As always, and... we're getting lots and lots of answers nowadays.
Too many, I think. I think we've been going really easy on people recently.
Okay.
So we're going to toughen it up. And the one I've got for this week is definitely, I haven't even seen it. So let's just quickly remind ourselves of this week's clip.
If that patrol were to have any crack shots, that orchard would be a goddamn sniper's delight.
Okay, so of course that was Brad Pitt in Inglourious Basterds. Lots of people got it right. But only one of you can win, unfortunately.
And apparently someone's got a very long name on this. We don't know if it's a gag.
Edward has trouble with pronunciation, so I think someone has... Either they've got an incredibly long name, or they're trying to, take
Test
amusement
me.
In his tongue-tied...
Well, luckily...
Yeah?
Whoever put that name in, whether they're legit or not, you didn't win, did you?
No.
Chloe Henderson won.
Oh, right. Congratulations.
Congratulations, Chloe Henderson. With two dots above the E, suggesting she is German or
umlaut.
French.
I think I might have just added the umlaut out on.
Oh, right.
Because, I don't know, there's fun. Umlauts are fun, aren't they?
Yeah, they can be.
Like in Spinal Tap, where there's an umlaut on the N, which doesn't actually do anything to the pronunciation of it.
Okay.
So well done.
So well done, Chloe.
Do you want to... Shall I scratch card?
Yeah, why don't you scratch it? Yeah.
So if you haven't listened to the show before, Chloe, this is the part of the proceedings where we scratch off your scratch card and you get to keep whatever you win. So we started positively with £50, £1,000, another £1,000. So you got six chances to get one more £1,000.
And you've won a grand.
There's £100. There's £5, there's £25. Oh dear, it's not looking great. There's £25, £100,000 and £100,000. So unfortunately, Chloe, you haven't won any money, but what you have won is a DVD.
It's a DVD. What DVD? Well, you have to find out. Because we've got a pillowcase full.
It's sort of a, yeah, I mean, if Santa turned up there, this should be disappointed. It's sort of quite a dirty pillowcase.
Yeah.
I'll give it a little mix around. No new ones in there, so, I mean, there are some real conkers in there.
Oh, yeah, we're due a bad one.
Just as long as you don't get White Chicks, you'll be all right.
And you have... Oh, The
dear.
Notebook.
That's
Chloe,
not good.
To be honest, every woman I've met has a copy of The Notebook.
Yeah, that's true. And that's why it's in there, because my sister's got two.
And Jermaine Greer's again, if you think I'm being sexist there, yeah. Right in.
Well, you know, who knows? You might enjoy it. It, of course, stars Ryan Gosling and Jennifer Garner. And no, it's not Jennifer
Rachel
Garner,
McAdams,
is it? It was Rachel McAdams, isn't it? You know, not for everyone, but who knows? So we'll be in touch with you
Empire
soon.
I think it's heartwarming, romantic, and someone also says...
Did they give it 4 stars like
they,
Empire?
They didn't put stars on. The most romantic movie since Titanic.
Oh, really?
So there we are.
So
and
there
gonna,
you go.
We're going to plop...
Scratch card in there, so we'll send it off to you.
We need that proof.
So commiserations to everyone who didn't win, but the good news is you've got another chance.
Yeah,
so
much
let's
harder.
Listen. Yeah, let's listen to this week's clip.
I know what Arthur's going to say. He's going to say, I gave you a chance. I put a brush in your hand. I went out on a limb for you, and you're going to toss it away to go and play bass.
Right, I'm aware of how abruptly the clip ends, but if you heard the... penultimate and final word of the sentence, then you definitely would have got it.
Yeah.
Well, you wouldn't definitely have got it. Maybe
no,
you wouldn't, because
I didn't.
You might not have heard seen the film. But Ed thought it was baseball.
No, I didn't. I was trying to finish the sentence because I knew it ended abruptly.
Okay.
I don't think there's any...
It's not baseball. And if you're wondering what that is, it's supposed to be a sort of northwestern accent, let's say.
Yeah.
Good luck. Of course, as usual, you can get in touch in the normal ways, such as go to celluloidheroesradio.com/competition. You can get in touch on Twitter at @mycelluloidhero. You can go to our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/celluloidheroes. And even if you don't want to answer, why not go to them anyway?
Yeah, have a look.
There's lots of stuff up there.
There's some interesting...
It's all good fun.
Yeah, it's interesting reviews and top tens.
Incidentally, our review of The Tree of Life is up on the website.
Yes.
We're not going to review that until the week before it comes out. But not many people in this country have reviewed it because it hasn't got a confirmed release date yet. But, you know, if you're a Terrence Malick fan, it might be fun for you to check that out. Who knows?
Hi, this is Simon Pegg, and you're listening to Celluloid Heroes.
It was a question on your lips. Now it's dribbling down your chin. You simply have to know, or you'll be straight back on the gin. The coronet is zeitgeist of the room that we are in. What's in the studio bin?
Is it kicking?
A couple of empty bottles of Evian water, some cheese and onion crisps, and a singular suspect torn piece of kitchen towel.
What's in the studio bin now?
Okay, welcome back to Celluloid Heroes Radio Show. Let's crack on with the reviews. I'm going to talk a little bit about a new film called Point Blank, which comes from its French title, which is A Bout Portant.
Why do they just keep it as A Bout Portant?
Because people can't say A Bout Portant, I suppose.
I should learn.
But it's by a guy called Fred Cavaillé, who, of course, as I said earlier, directed Port L, which went on to go and be remade as The Next 3 Days with Russell Crowe running around a lot.
Yeah.
And, you know, thematically, there's some similarities. So this one stars a huge French superstar called Gilles Luchel, who was in the film Le Petit Mouchoir, or Little White Lies, that I reviewed a few weeks ago. It also stars Ruchon Dizem and Gérard Lanvin.
Well done.
Okay.
Shame.
So basically, we follow the story of Samuel, played by Gilles Lelouch, and he is a sort of everyman. He's training to be a nurse, and he has a pregnant wife at home called Nadia, but she's Spanish, and they're very happy together. Much like at the beginning of Last Night, they sort of giggle, they're doing a lot of kissing, they go for an ultrasound and see that they've got un petit fille. And, you know, as with The Next 3 Days and a lot of his work, the sort of thematic strand is an ordinary guy who finds himself in an extraordinary situation.
Right.
So then we cut to this pre-title scene of some rather dodgy-looking men running around tunnels in France, in Paris, and then one guy gets hit by a motorbike as he's running away and gets rushed to hospital, where Samuel, who is just about to do his exams to become a proper nurse, treats him and saves his life by being a bit of a maverick and not waiting for his supervisor to get there. They say, "Oh, you know, Samuel, you should not do it." Well, it's actually in French.
Yeah.
So they don't sound like that. No. But they say, you know, you can't do that because, you know, I would take the rap for it if you messed it up. So he feels quite happy about it. But the guy he saved turns out to be a bit of an unsavory character, let's say. So he gets home and his wife's there. It's all fine. And someone comes in through the door and smashes him in the head with a gun. And then he wakes up, his wife's gone. He gets a phone call saying, "We've got your wife, we'll kill her unless you go to the hospital and get this guy out and bring her to meet us." So in very much the same way as Russell Crowe has to break his wife out of prison, they'll do anything for love. So basically, I mean, that's the general premise, and it romps along from there. It's only 84 minutes.
Great.
Which is an absolute blessing, you know, if you're a film critic. And it actually does a very good job of keeping up its intensity all the way through, because sometimes these things can lag.
Bring in another character.
And, you know, it's one of these, like, trust everyone, who's worse, the bent cops or the bad guys? There seems to be a few bad guys, twists everywhere, more twists than a curly whirly. And, you know, it stops itself from being silly, which is, you know, quite hard to do. It almost verges onto that. It is also very Bournean, Greengrassian, has that very familiar, you know, staccato, jerky string score that we all know and love. You know, it's a very, very well directed chase scenes, are harder than you would think to make, because, you know, when you watch things like Unknown and Taken and stuff, like, this actually gets it very right. And incidentally, it's quite strange that I watched last night Carlito's Way, which has that amazing chase in the denouement through the sort of escalators and stuff of Grand Central Station when he's running for his train. And this very much pays homage to that scene in Carlito's Way, running through the metro, lots of going up in lifts and stairs and stuff. And, you know, it's a real sort of nuts and bolts action thriller, proper, you know, as you would call them, watch with your dad thing.
Dad film.
It's more violent. I mean, inevitably it will be remade by Americans.
Yeah, can't wait.
Inevitably it'll be worse.
Can't wait.
As was the case with the first one, apparently, although I haven't seen the
next 3 days
I've seen the original. As I say, there's a couple of, like, moments where everyone in the cinema was like, when someone gets stabbed in the eye with a pencil, which is quite gory. There's lots of blood and stuff. You know, but it has a sort of, you know, he's getting himself in deeper and deeper. He's on the run. He's telling everyone he's innocent. He does quite a lot of criming along the way. So, you know, I won't say what happens at the end, but, you know, you would think it wouldn't be that much easy to just walk away from. But it's really well acted. And the central two roles, coincidentally, Gilles Lelouch looks very much like Eric Cantona. And the guy he's playing opposite, the main bad guy, looks very much like Rio Ferdinand. So in the scenes where they're running through the thing, it does look a little bit like a Nike advert sometimes.
Or a Giggs testimonial.
It's very nicely edited. It's got the, you know, very frenetic, jumpy editing that you would expect from this sort of genre. But it's sharp, it's smart, and it's quick. It's unpretentious, it's unashamed in what it is, and what it is a great little 84-minute action film. Go and see it before they make the American one, because it will undoubtedly be better. A classic 4-starer, like, really nice. Good fun.
Yeah, great.
Okay. So
Prom
we've heard a lot about.
My forfeit.
Yeah.
Best way to sum this film up, apart from being a forfeit, is like the Love Actually of proms.
Okay.
It's like the
intertwining storylines.
Intertwining stories, yeah.
Sure.
Or the Amores Perros. No, not quite. Not quite, because that's four individual stories. That,
or the Pulp
one
Fiction.
The Pulp Fiction of proms. Yeah. Prom Fiction.
Yeah, okay.
Okay. And what I decided to do is just list the stories, list the scenarios of each story, and there's 6 in total. and then I'll go on about everything else. I'm not going to tell you who acts in it. There's one actor I picked out simply because he's quite young and he might, I mean, it's hard because all sort of Disney actors, sort of Nickelodeon actors, you know, apart from one guy, I'll come back, I don't like him. His character's called Tyler. You know, like the girls, they might go on to be, you know, in a few sort of more Disney films, more sort of souped up Disney, like proper features. And others will fade away and go into rehab before they even, before they blink.
Yeah, I've seen a few junkets with the stars and they seem very irritating.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you what's really irritating is when, I mean, the main character in this is class president and organising the prom. And she's supposed to be like a normal person. And you just know that she's not normal. She's not normal. So how dare you even try and pretend? Don't let her act as a normal person. You know, if you're going to write the story around her, make her the prom queen, but she's not.
Okay.
Anyway, story run, or story one. Yeah. If I can pronounce my zeros.
How many have we got to go?
We've got story. We got six.
Six stories. We're going to go through all of them.
Six and so on. Okay, I'm just going to quickly give you a brief description. So basically, firstly, there's a prom committee, yeah?
Yeah.
And class president is the main one, and she is the main star, as I said. And she's got two friends, two girlfriends, who are also in the committee, and then the two guys in the committee, yeah? Mm-hmm. One's called Brendan, who he really wants to ask out, you know, really wants him to ask her out on the prom, can't wait. The first scene, the girls come and like, has he asked you? And she's like, no, but he will. And then Brenda's friend's like, well, I'd like to say stoner, but they don't, yeah, obviously they don't touch on that, but he's like a sort of hippie sort of dopey, okay. And we'll come back onto him in a sec. So that's just the main one. Anyway, so story one is class president falling in love with the rebel, yeah. And the rebel is another little story, and basically, unfortunately, I'll come onto it, but the people who everyone knows, and apparently in America, everyone knows who's going to be the prom king and queen. It's not like, who's going to be? Is it going to be you or me? It's not like Prom Wars, which it is in the film.
That sounds like a more interesting film title.
Yeah, but I don't think there has been a film called Prom Wars, but there's one in the making, Disney, if you're listening. The prom queen, and basically all the sort of decorations for the prom have been already already made, yeah, and they've been stored in the shed so everyone can get on and crackle down a bit of education, a bit of exams for the end of term. But the prom queen and prom queen, the future prom king and king, go crack into the shed. He breaks in, puts loads of candles up, and like asks the queen to the prom officially in a very romantic scene. One candle doesn't blow out, and the whole thing gets burnt. And she's like, "Oh no, what are we gonna do?" And like the headmaster's like, "We might have to cancel prom." He's like, "No, we can't do that." And it's like, "I need help, committee." It's like the committee's like, "I can't. I've got to do my exams." It's like, "Why are you gonna do it?" And the headmaster's like, "Well, get this rebel to do it with you because you know he's got to because he's been such a bad boy." So he's like, "Oh, I don't want to work with him. He's horrible. He doesn't even like prom." It's like, "Well, you've got to do it." So there's that love story. And this rebel, yeah, he doesn't swear, he doesn't drink, and he doesn't smoke. But he's dressed up like the rebel in Breakfast Club.
Oh, right.
So he's got gloves on, and he's got a leather jacket, and he's got long hair.
It's a very strange look. It has a sort of different connotation.
Yeah, so it's like he's just popped out from the 80s, which is crazy. And these two, I mean, I'll dwell on this story because it's, you know, the main story. And these two, I mean, Sam Worthington and Keira Knightley had little to none.
In terms of chemistry. Yeah.
These two have zero. I mean... It's like they did their scene separately and then someone stuck the film together. It's unreal. I mean, they obviously didn't get along. This guy is probably the worst actor out of them all. He'll probably turn into a new Channing Tatum. I really hope he doesn't. But let's hope that. And then obviously the dad doesn't want him because dad doesn't want his daughter to go out of there, and there might be stories around there. And it's the kind of film I was like saying, it's like you cast this comes up and you get all these unknowns, and then you expect like and Dan Aykroyd or something, and John Goodman, but then none of that. This dad's an unknown. It's a shame because it'd be nice. I mean, usually it's like being a teacher and being on weekend duty. Yeah. You got to do it now and then,
exactly,
and Disney might have got you in a little loophole, but their contract seemed to be pretty clean because there's no one in this. Apart from just Disney kids. So that story is the main thesis of the nucleus of the plot. Yeah.
Okay.
And then story two, we got prom king and prom queen, yeah?
Yeah.
And they are Tyler and I don't know what her name is. And they're like, well, they're the Afro-American. He's amazing at
basketball?
Lacrosse.
Lacrosse.
They go on the American Pie thing with lacrosse. And she's just a lovely girl, yeah? Mm-hmm. But he's like, hey, Mike, high five, everyone, high five, everyone, high five. But he's also cheating on her. And you've got the typical scene, I found this earring in your car. It's like, oh, no, but it's like, I took all the soccer team to practice. And it's like, oh, okay, I believe you. All that. Mm-hmm. So there's a bit of a, you know, story there. So that's story two. Story three are the sophomore buddies, which is the year before final year. And they're best buddies, yeah? And they,
what have they got to do with prom?
Well, they're just like, oh, I really want to go to prom.
Wait your turn.
Yeah, and anyway, they're best buddies, and they love rock music. And every time you see them on the screen, it's like, top five lead singers, top five this. Like, who's your favourite band? It's like all that, yeah? But he, Lucas, is one of them. Mm-hmm. He's quite chiselled for a 16-year-old boy. whoa. He is in love with her chemistry partner. Who's lovely. She's called Simone, and she's played, I don't know, what she's someone, Campbell. She, again, she'll probably be the new pinup in a couple of years' time. Mm-hmm. And he wants to tell her how much he loves her. So there's a sort of love story there, but also there's the buddy relationship, and every time they go on a little sort of play date or something, he feels left out. And Simone's sort of mucking him around because she's having an affair with the prom king.
Oh, right, okay, so that's the one.
And could well be her earring.
Yeah, you know? could well be
Simone's earring. So Simone is played by whoever this character is, by a 16-year-old. And Tyler is played by prom king. Everyone else is played by their age, apart from Tyler, prom king, who's 29.
Really?
Yeah, he's 30 this year. It's unreal. You know, I understand that, you know, you got to cast a bit older, but this guy's 30, and it literally just looks like, you know, when I'm going back to the high fives down the corridor, it's just like this man going, slamming everyone to the floor, like, high five,
He must have felt really odd on set.
Really odd. If this film was made a year earlier, he'd be in prison.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because he'd be 28 and she'd be 15.
Okay, yeah, sure. I thought you meant that the actor had some previous felonies.
No.
He's just come out.
No. And it turns out that the actor, who's, I can't remember his name, his surname's Nixon, and his father was an NBA star. So there we are.
There you go.
So maybe a favour.
Obviously where he is on merit then.
Yeah, I mean, he was, and he didn't have his age on IMDb. I was like, no, you're old. And I didn't know, they didn't have her age on IMDb. It was like Disney had taken their ages down.
Yeah.
I found out later that he was in The Bodyguard, as one of the kids in The Bodyguard. He was in Terminator 2, so he'd been around for a long time. And he played an 11-year-old in a film, and I worked back from that. And she, her age was up on Wikipedia. So, you know, a couple of years in or out, but generally sick. Don't like that, Disney. Don't like that at all. So one of the sophomore buddies is played by Cameron Monaghan, and he's the only guy I thought was like, you could make it in sort of telly.
Maybe film.
But so watch out for Cameron Monaghan. I mean, he's the only actor. Watch out Hollywood. So anyway, that's story three. Story four is prom organiser one. I've labelled her, who's prom committee leader's best friend. She's Chinese, and her boyfriend. Yeah, typical cliche of like, oh, I said I was going to go to Michigan with him, but I've just got into Brown or Princeton. It's like, oh, I'm not telling her.
Dilemma
there, that's story four. Story five is the geek, the sort of Napoleon Dynamite character, and his troll of a sister. I mean, actually troll. And I was like, what? Have you seen Paul Blart Mall Cop?
I have, yeah.
There's a little troll in that.
Yeah.
The same person.
Oh, right, okay.
And he's like, prom's passing by. She's like, you got to ask someone for the prom. So all his scenes are sort of very comedic situations when he tries desperately to ask someone out of a prom. And one example is sort of putting an invitation to ask someone out on the prom, but using cut-out pieces of magazines and newspapers. Yeah. And she thinks she's been hunted by a serial killer. one of the many funny situations, but actually one of the situations I did laugh, so there's one laugh tally.
Oh dear.
And that's just, you
not
know,
as
I
good
laugh.
As Diary of a Wimpy Kid 2. Laugh tally, I think I got four.
No, I only got one of this, but this is bad, whereas Diary of a Wimpy Kid 2 is all right. So that's story five, and then story six is prom organizer two, who is just a nothing character, with this sort of stoner dopey guy. And she's like, Have you asked anyone for the prom? It's like, yeah, I brought my Canadian girlfriend coming through. And she's like, yeah, I don't think you're having a Canadian girlfriend. And then, you know, he keeps on telling these sort of
just
sort of stories that can't be true, and she doesn't believe them. But of course, at the end,
a bit like that guy in American Pie.
Yeah. But in the end, this amazing woman comes down, and he's not lying at all. He's just really dopey and innocent. So those are the six stories, and they all intertwine terribly badly.
Okay.
And I don't know where this. I've got a little joke here. So I think this high school was set in Stereotype Town.
Okay.
Which is in the suburbs of Coincidence City. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because that is it. I mean, it's every stereotype under the book, in the book here. The plot is revolved around ridiculous coincidence.
Yeah.
I'll give you an example. The rebel, whose dad left ages ago. He hates any after sort of like the climax when he hasn't asked for the prom. He's like ended it. He's gone down to the basement where all his dad's stuff was, and he's chucking all his clothes into the bed. He hates all his clothes, and his mum comes down and goes, "Look, just don't do that." And it turns out the only clothes left on the shelf is the tux. It's like, hey, look at this. Let's go.
Boom.
And all that. I mean, it's
dreadful.
And quite luckily, I didn't invite a family of 10-year-olds and 12-year-olds. But luckily, the only, apart from some kisses behind me,
really?
For all the films. I had to go to Leicester Square to see this. It wasn't like they were short of choice.
Yeah.
They could have seen any film. They chose to see this malarkey. They were just snogging in the back. And occasionally I could hear this sort of, ugh, snog. It's quite disgusting. In front, I had a family of, I'd say there's probably a 12-year-old kid, a couple of 10-year-olds, maybe an 8-year-old, yeah. It's a perfect prime target audience. And they were restless.
Yeah.
So they didn't like it.
Okay. How long is it?
It's dreadful. I don't know how long. I didn't even look. It felt like
a fortnight.
Yeah, it felt like a week.
Yeah.
A week long. Have I written anything? Oh, yeah. The only nice bit about the film was when the two sophomore buddies, when they reunite at the end, it's like, yeah. And it's like top five breakups, band breakups all the time. And he goes, Oasis, The Kinks. I was like, hey.
Oh, great.
So they put The Kinks in there. They reference The Kinks and they reference Oasis, which is sort of nice because they're, well, two great English bands and, two brothers. Yeah. And anyway, they're referencing an American Disney prom film.
Yeah.
So there we are. So I'm not going to say much more about that. It's a shame
in tone, is it more adult than something like High School Musical?
No, it's like High School Musical. It's just like High School.
Yeah.
I think they were going to do Prom the Musical, but they couldn't find anyone to write the music and anyone who could sing, so just call it Prom.
How does it compare to your other forfeits of recent times?
Well, I mean, again, it's for an audience.
Yeah.
The minor demographic I had, target audience, sort of market, sort of a focus group I had with me, by coincidence, didn't like it, but I can't suggest that not everyone like it. I think it's certainly maybe a film the American audience would love more because there's far more sort of familiarities they can take from it. But for me, it's something that should be, certainly just a TV movie on the Disney Channel.
Yeah.
Shouldn't have been given big screen.
Okay.
A big screen appearance. And it's a shame. And certainly probably why it's not really showing anywhere in London.
Mm.
So, yeah, terrible. So, yeah, good forfeit. Oh, well. Obvious one, but a good one.
Well, there's a big one out this week.
Yeah, we know.
Huge.
Well, we can conclude our prom talk with the prom movies, prom themed movies.
Yeah, well, I mean, we asked you, I mean, we'll pop these up on the website, but yeah, I mean, the argument that I was having was the Enchantment Under the Sea dance in Back to the Future, is that a prom? And someone said it definitely is a prom because someone refers to it as the prom. But then a prom has to be at the end of the year, surely.
Maybe,
So I tweeted out to all our American followers, got an incredible amount of followers in the last week, actually.
Yeah,
I don't know where they're all coming from, but lots from America. So cheers, America.
Yeah, keep it
coming. Keep going on the what should we call our race war?
Yeah, the Ryder Cup. The film Ryder Cup.
Yeah, so come on.
Yeah.
I haven't checked the stats this week, actually, but let's hope Europe are fighting back.
The Americans have all... /2.
But anyway, all the Americans said that they had never heard of a prom being earlier on because the time circuits specifically say when he goes back to 1955 that he goes back on the 25th of October.
Yeah.
So how can he have a prom? I mean, he's not in 1955 for more than a week.
Yeah.
So
yeah, that's
still
it.
Definitely October.
Yeah.
So is it a prom? Isn't it? Anyway, what were the big ones that came out a lot? I mean,
Carrie was number one hit.
The big one.
Yeah. Some sadistic people out there. But it is prom themed.
Prom night.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's the original Prom Night or the remake.
Mal Jutley, one of our fans, said the original. Yeah. That's usually which we're questioning. No Grease.
No Grease.
Sort of. I was looking for this, you know, the sort of crummy teen comedies.
Someone
like
suggested the
She's the One and
the
all
Francis
that.
Ford Coppola one. What's it called? Peggy Sue Got Married.
Yes. Yeah. Oh yeah. And Pretty in Pink was also. That's a good film. That's a John Hughes film, and that's actually a good film. There's a good song in that, which I can't remember.
Is that John? I didn't know that was John Hughes.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. So thanks for all of them. We'll pop them up on the website and do a little top 10 of all your votes. But for now, we've got an interview with the director and writer and star of a new film called Blind Date.
Hi, this is Simon Pegg, and you're listening to Celluloid Heroes.
So joining us now are the writers and directors and producers as well, aren't you guys?
Yep.
Okay, a short film called Blind Date. So I'll introduce you to Abby and Joe.
Hello, I'm Abby.
Hi, Abby.
Hi, I'm Joe.
Hi, okay. Joe.
So we're all in different locations around. Are you both in London or are you...
Yeah, I'm north. Where are you, Joe, again?
I'm east, I'm in Hackney.
Okay, so we got south, north and east. So,
and I live in the west, but I'm not on the west.
Exactly, so we're pretty much the whole circumference. So Abby, you're the writer of the film, and did you help produce it as well?
Yes, Joe and I produced it together. We did have a producer originally, but she broke her arm dropped out.
Oh, right.
And so that was our first hurdle.
Okay, so tell us a little bit about the story and how you came up with it.
Well, I was inspired by Cavan Clerkin, who plays the man in the film.
Yeah.
He's obviously a fantastic comedy actor and drama actor as well. But
yeah, we're enjoying him in The Shadow Line at the moment.
Oh, I haven't seen that.
Yeah.
And he and I were both in Pulling, sitcom Pulling.
Okay.
He played Carl, obviously. I played Diane. Mm-hmm. Pivotal role, but, you know, little scene.
Yeah. it was great, very well received, Pulling, actually. Is it still going or did they cancel it?
No, they did two series, then it got cancelled, and they were given an hour special to round things up, tie everything up.
That was kind of them, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Wasn't it?
Yeah.
It was just the wrong channel, I think,
sadly.
And so I wrote, I was inspired by Cav, who wanted to start a film club, which Joe will talk about.
Yeah.
And he mentioned something about making short films in one location, shot on one day. And that was it. And so I immediately thought about a woman, how funny it would be for a woman to turn up to a pub looking for her blind date and him not being there and approaching the wrong guy. That was the image I had of just walking into a busy pub and approaching the wrong guy.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And being all confident about it.
Yeah.
Hey. It's like, no, I'm not him. And just being really embarrassed from the get go.
Yeah. It was a very funny film. And was any of it improvised or was it all sort of written down? Did you work together writing it or did you write it completely on your own?
I had the idea in my head for about 7 months before I actually pitched it to anyone. I think I'd mentioned it to a friend who said it was a good idea. And I thought, okay, brilliant, I might be on something. And then I just had it in my head. I pitched it to Cavan and the other film club members and they said, great, write a script. And I think because I had it in my head for so long, and I had notes already, it took me about half an hour to write the script.
Oh, right.
And I said, it was ridiculous.
Am I right in thinking it was quite a quick shoot? Did you do it all in a day?
Yeah, we shot it in about 9 hours.
Oh, right. That's very impressive.
That is very impressive.
Thank you. We were well prepared. Because we only had the pub for that long. But the middle section, the montage-y bit where we were getting drunk, that was ad-libbed a bit.
Yeah,
I'd written the script, but I'd left a sort of montage-y section and I'd written some feed lines. For example, when Cav says, he said, I was addicted to Dungeons and Dragons. I think that was my line.
Yeah, that was a great
and then
line.
He ad-libbed, not the game, the cartoon.
Yeah.
So, Joe, you directed the film.
I did, yes. I directed the film.
Yeah. And how did you and Abby meet?
We met through Sunday Film Club. We were both through the film club we met, and we both knew Cavan separately, and he kind of pulled everybody together for the film club, and then it was friends to friends, and we met through a few productions that we did with the Sunday Film Club. We worked on, I think, two or three films before.
You directed me in something. a cancer comedy, I believe.
Oh.
Which is a hilarious subject. It was actually really good. It was really good, that film.
Yeah,
yeah, exactly.
So did you shoot it yourself? Because it's shot with two cameras, isn't it?
Yes, the film Blind Date shot with two cameras because of the time restraints and allowing the lovely dynamic between Abby and Kevin to flow. Two cameras is what we thought was the best way to go forward with that. And John Wood, very talented cameraman, stepped in because he was Shaun of the Dead and some other interesting projects like that.
That's a good sort of comedy.
Comedy experience pedigree, to have. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's mostly set in a pub as well.
Exactly. On easy territory there, John.
Because the montage scene is one that really stands out, and I think it's really terrifically shot, actually. But one thing I've always wondered about drinking montages is there much drinking going on?
No. The drink was funny because we couldn't have ice because we were wearing mics. And we couldn't have fizzy, we couldn't have tonic or soda water because of the sound issues. Yeah. So it was warm water with bits of lemon and lime in it.
Sounds how
revolting.
It was revolting. I nearly vomited a couple of times.
Which could have added to the montage, to be honest.
Added to the kind of drunken kind of wayward flow of it. Yeah. They were actually high on what I'd given them at lunchtime. They came back after lunch and it was all fun and games and we kind of cracked on and it worked pretty well, I thought.
When you drink that much liquid, you do feel a bit drunk anyway, naturally.
Yeah. Must be quite a few comfort breaks as well.
So what was the beer you were drinking in the end, or was that beer?
Oh, that was real. That was real. We had real pints at the end,
yeah. Fake beer.
No.
That was the end of the day. Time for some beer.
We shot it sequence and we said we want real beer for this.
That's nice.
Cabin was drinking Supermalt all the way through. That's what Park was in that, didn't it? I don't think he's drunk a glass of that ever since.
You weren't drinking Calibre, the non-alcoholic beer, then?
It was like Beck's, non-alcoholic Beck's.
And
with some water in it, with some lemonade in it.
All the background artists, whenever they, after every take, they had to go back to the bar and have their drinks refilled for continuity. I think we ran out of apple juice and stuff quite quickly. And so the barman, incidentally played by my brother, Matt Blackmore, he was filling them up with whatever he could find, bits of old non-alcoholic lager. It was just disgusting. So by the end of the day, everybody was a bit ill. And Kevin bought everybody
bloated,
a drink at the end.
Not drunk.
So when you wrapped, when did you wrap and what did you do with the film? Where did you take it?
Yeah, we wrapped at about midnight on the day of the shoot and then took the tapes with us back to a...
We just looked at each other, didn't we, Joe, and just said we want to edit this ourselves. We had someone who had volunteered to edit, but he was busy anyway, and it was such a mammoth job. We had about 4 hours worth of rushes.
Mm. Yeah.
And so we thought we'd give it a go ourselves. So I put together, I think.
Am I right in thinking you took the film to the States?
We took
not initially. The initial cut, we took a rough cut of the film to the Sunday Film Club.
Yeah.
Back to the Sunday Film Club to have a look at it. And everyone was tremendously supportive of it, really loved it. And we really thought we had something great on our hands. It really kind of wowed us. And I was kind of really impressed by the reaction that we got from everybody and really thought that we'd done something good.
Yeah.
And it was worth pushing forward onto a next level with it.
And suddenly we could do festivals. Can you imagine?
Wow. Imagine this could be something excellent. And then we went to the Film Council, as was, because there was the Completion Fund, which was one of the funding strands they had for getting films made, and went through the process of applying for the Completion Fund, which meant a bit of a hiatus.
Yeah, so we had to wait for a bit while we were waiting to hear if we got the Completion Fund. So meanwhile, we were showing it to friends and contacts and things. Mm. And then we finished it with their money.
Mm-hmm.
And we did our first screening at the Edinburgh Film Festival just to industry types and got some good feedback from production companies. And then didn't get into any festivals for ages. And then they started coming in from the States. And it seems that the Americans have taken to the film quite well. We got the audience award at Austin in October, which was amazing.
Congratulations! Great. Yeah, I saw. I mean,
thank you.
Must be.
I went over there for a week. It was absolutely. I couldn't believe it. It was brilliant. I mean, I was over there and had a lot of great feedback while I was there and doing Q&As and you know, because I'm in the film as well, it's really useful.
Yeah.
People recognize me and approached me a lot about the film, especially film students as well. That was good.
Oh, right. Do you have any plans to take it anywhere else?
We are going to the LA Film Festival next week.
Exciting.
Oh, yeah, well, best of luck.
Thank you. And we've also got into San Antonio. We've just done in Texas, and we've just done the Worldwide Short Film Festival in Toronto, and another one that we're not allowed to announce yet, but it's in America.
Oh, right. Well, that's all very exciting. So in terms of what's next, are you going to work together again?
We might do. We haven't got any definite plans. I know Joe's developing some films, and I'm writing. I've just written my first feature script. I've got a great agent out of this, and she's got my script at the moment, so find out what she thinks. But that's it's a zombie vampire horror comedy.
Ooh. Ah, so, well, we're big Shaun the Dead fans here.
Yeah.
Oh, well, that's
it. It's a big
markup,
isn't it?
Yeah, me too.
It's a big bookmark, isn't it? A sort of a benchmark. Even.
Yes, absolutely, totally. And people keep asking me, you know, what would you compare it to? And I said, look, if it's anywhere near as good as Shaun of the Dead, I will retire.
Yeah. And what about you, Joe? What have you got in the pipeline?
In the pipeline, I've got a couple of more short film scripts I'm looking at. Hoping to start shooting on something else in October, which is a serial killer thriller piece set in the south of England. Kind of edgy little number there.
Yeah.
And then a comedy script about a old man who wants to die laughing. So he hires a clown to do away with him. And things that go according to plan.
That's great.
And looking at longer form projects as a next step, as a moving on to that. So, yeah, building up the package, really. That's what I'm working on.
And we're going to be networking like crazy in LA, obviously. Yeah. And we're doing Q&As there with both screenings, so that'll be fun.
Oh, right.
Brilliant.
Sorry, Joe, carry on.
And poolside mixers. I'm preparing for those. Quite important.
So is there a plan to release the film through a sort of pay per service or DVD or anything that people can check it out?
We've got a sales agent who keeps sending us messages saying, we love you, we want to sign you, let's meet. And so I think she's so busy. So hopefully we'll go with them and get maybe something on DVD or a compilation or something. I'm not really sure how it works with short films.
Yeah. Well, let us know and we'll pass it on.
Thank you. And one more thing, Cavan actually wrote a feature film and I play his wife in that, and they're completing that at the moment. So hopefully that'll be going into festivals, but that's a crime drama, much darker.
What's it called? Oh.
Nice Guy.
Nice Guy. Okay, nice guy. We'll look out for it. Brilliant. Well, Abigail Blackmore, Joe Rosen, thank you very much for coming on the show.
Thank you for having us.
And people check out Blind Date. It's really funny. It's a great little short film.
Yeah, we'll keep everyone, all our listeners, all our many listeners, updated of when and where you can see it and what festivals will be at, as you just said. And good luck with the future.
Thank you so much.
It goes so well.
Cheers, mate.
Thank you.
I'm a stonker. Oh, you stinker. What's a stonker? Mr. Stinker.
There you go.
That's the Wilhelm scream.
That certainly is the Wilhelm scream. Yeah, well spotted.
Yeah.
I put that in reminder because there are lots of them in Kung Fu Panda.
Are there?
Yeah.
They sort of bleed it.
It reminded me.
Well, will there be a few in my stinking stonker list?
Probably. There'll be at least one. So this is the Stinker and Stonker, the part of the show where we go through the UK's television film listings and we'll pick a film of the week and one to avoid like the plague.
Yeah. Yeah, or E. coli.
Yeah. But and if you're American and you don't have a British television, then, you know, don't worry.
Yeah.
You might find something.
And if you don't watch World News, there's a sort of E. coli epidemic in Europe with cucumbers. Mm-hmm. So that was a bit of satire.
She had a delicious tuna and cucumber sandwich today.
I'm avoiding them.
Absolutely fine. Are you really?
Yeah.
They wouldn't sell them.
I had a chicken Caesar wrap today and I had to unravel it to check. And they didn't. It's this iceberg lettuce.
I've been going really odd options at lunch. I did the Tesco Finest beef salt beef even.
It's the salt beef.
It's not very nice.
Mm. Well, it doesn't sound
nice. Don't recommend it. Anyway, crack
on. So what do you want, stinkers or stonkers?
We'll have, why don't we start with stonkers this week?
Stonkers this time. I've decided off the cuff to change one and put it as an obelix.
Okay.
Rather than a stonker, which I think it sort of is. But anyway, we'll start with Thursday night at 10 o'clock on ITV4, American History X.
Okay.
A lovely romp about neo-Nazis.
Yeah.
And then Friday...
Curb stomping.
Curb stomping. Friday, 9 o'clock on More 4 is... It's a good little film called The Escapist. Brian okay. Cox, Damian Lewis, Joseph Fiennes. I really liked it. Mm-hmm. 9 p.m. on ITV2 is Gladiator.
Okay.
So you've got to put it in because it's an epic.
Yeah, sure.
11.50 on BBC2 is a film you'll like. It's Brazil, Terry Gilliam's okay. Brazil.
Well, you don't have to do the rest of the list.
Really?
Nothing's going to beat that.
Yeah, it will. Yeah. Really? Well, we'll check. 10 o'clock on ITV3 is The Murder on the Orient Express.
Mm-hmm.
Bit of a, you know, an old-fashioned
romp. Classic. One for Dad.
It's the best Agatha Christie film adaptation there's ever been, mm-hmm. but there haven't been many. Saturday at 9.55 on ITV. It comes up now and again, but when it's on ITV1, you've got to put it down so people, you know, really don't have any other choice of television. It's Batman Begins. Yeah.
Okay.
At 10 past 10 on ITV4... is a Stanley Kubrick satirical look at Vietnam in a okay. Full Metal Jacket. 11.50 on ITV2 is no longer there because I've transferred that to the Obelix. Sunday, 11.15 on Channel 5 is Reservoir Dogs.
Okay.
Monday...
Someone won the other day in the
acting. Someone did win, yeah. And Monday at 9 o'clock on Film 4 is Walk the Line.
Yeah, fine.
Yeah. And 6.45 on Film 4... is Cocoon. I don't know quite why I put that on.
Yeah, but that sounds like an asterisk to me.
It would have been an asterisk, obelisk, but it doesn't really enter my theme.
Okay. Well, obviously there's one...
No, I've got two more, sorry.
Oh, two more. Sorry. Come on then, God, get them out.
Okay. This Tuesday
late,
at 11.05 is Neil by Mouth on Film 4,
okay.
which is fantastic. Gary Oldman's debut directing... Turned out some fantastic performances from Kathy Burke and Ray Winston. And then there's one at 10.35 on ITV. It's called The... And then I can't read.
Oh, come on.
I would have written it.
I'm not going to be able to read it if you can't read it. You wrote it.
Yeah. The Game.
The Game. Oh, The Game. All right. That's not really a hard one. I thought it was going to be like the Gewurztraminer or something.
What's that? That's hardly...
I'll tell you what it is. Sloppy.
It's sloppy handwriting.
Sloppy radio, sloppy handwriting.
It's sloppy all around.
Well, yeah.
And it's hardly... I really liked it. Fincher earlier.
I like The Game very much. But Terry Gilliam's Brazil is Head and Shoulders.
That's 10 to midnight on BBC Two on Friday.
Really? Well,
it's 10 to Saturday on BBC Two.
I watched 12 Monkeys this week as well, which I forgot how brilliant it is.
Yeah.
So
I'll go on to the stinkers.
Stinkers then.
Oh, and this will really smell this week. Wednesday, 11.15 on BBC One. Again, that's two weeks running we've had a stinker in the BBC One section. It's The Mexican.
Okay.
Brad Pitt and Julia Roberts and James Gandolfini. 11.25 on ITV Two. You get it occasionally, but you've got to put it in there. It's a whole 10 yards.
Yeah.
9 p.m. on 5 USA. Wasn't going to be too long till
that
name came along. And it's Universal Soldier Dash The Return.
Oh, The Return.
Yeah, I think the title, the guy who wrote that, put it the wrong way around. I think it was supposed
Return
to be called
The
Return
Soldier.
Of the Universal Soldier. But they thought they'd be clever and put it back to front.
Yeah. Well.
10.35 is American Pie Presents The Band Camp on ITV. And coincidentally, same director as director of Prom.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
It's strange that I didn't think that straight-to-DVD things got put on the telly much.
Oh, certainly nowadays they do.
Now you've got people like Five Star fishing around for tripe.
But saying that, this is ITV1.
Yeah, well, you know, that's hardly much better.
No. Saturday, 5.10. And again... Some people might like this, but it's known as a very offensive comedy.
Okay.
Yeah. Not as offensive. Well, it's probably as offensive as The Hangover. It's got Richard Pryor and Gene Wilder. It's See No Evil, Hear No Evil.
Okay. Yeah.
So it's basically having a pop at blind people and deaf people.
Yeah.
7.05 on ITV2 is The Scorpion King.
Ooh.
8 p.m. on Five Star is that hysterical romp with Sandra Bullock and Hugh Grant. 2 weeks' notice.
Oh, right.
Sunday at 10 o'clock, and I think this might have even been an asterisk before, but it's on ITV2, it's my favourite, you know, there's some fantastic Samuel L. Jackson monologues, but my favourite is in The Deep Blue Sea.
Okay. Oh, dear.
We will not die down here. And then he gets munched by a giant shark. Great. Yep. 9 o'clock.
LL Cool J.
Yeah, LL Cool J and a parrot. It's great stuff. A lot of fun making that film, I imagine.
Yeah.
At the same time, quite pruned fingers, because they spend a lot of time in water. Yeah. And pruned feet. But mainly fingers. 9 p.m. on ITV4 is a real blast in the past. It's Barbed Wire.
Okay.
Pamela Anderson. And you know who else is in it?
Nobody.
Because yeah, no one else should sure be no absolutely one, yeah. No one in the right mind. They've all got sort of foreign names, but they're American. So immigrants. Monday on 5 Star,
mm-hmm.
9 o'clock is The Wicker Man,
the remake. Cage one.
The remake. Yeah. But talking about Cage in terms of being in Caged, I would, you know, that's at 9 o'clock on 5 Star. I'd probably like, you know, flick on about 10:30, and then you will get to see Nick Cage getting burnt alive, which is always rather funny. Yeah. I haven't seen it. But I imagine he does a great scream, a great sort of Wilhelm scream.
Probably really subtle, and knowing Nick Cage.
Yeah.
Well, that's winning at the moment.
And
I think.
Yeah, and then Tuesday, 9 o'clock on Film 4 is The Bulletproof Monk.
Okay.
And I was wondering, would any of those have the Wilhelm scream? Probably not.
No, maybe not.
Scorpion King?
Maybe 2 weeks' notice.
Yeah, or The Bulletproof Monk.
Yeah, maybe. Well, I think I'm going to go for the remake of The Wicker Man just because, you know, if you're a crap remake, then you're automatically 10 points off.
Yeah.
You got a lot of ground to make up.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'll go for that then.
What? Quick question. What's worse? I haven't seen either of them. The Wicker Man remake or Michael Caine's remake, which is supposed to like Get Carter remake? What would you rather see?
Oh, probably the Get Carter one.
Yeah.
I've never seen the end of it, though.
Okay, so my quick asterisk and obelisk is Before They Were Famous theme. Okay?
Okay.
So Quick and the Dead is on Channel 4 Saturday, 11:05 p.m. Mm-hmm. It was played in 1995 before The Gladiator, Russell Crowe. Yeah. You had Russ Crowe and Leonardo DiCaprio before they were really big.
Yeah.
Sharon Stone being like the sheriff and Gene Hackman being, as always, a great bad guy.
Gene Hackman.
Yeah. And the other one I put, which was originally in the Stonker list, is sort of an old class, old favourite of mine. It was the first 12 I ever saw. It's also the first 12 I ever bought on tape, underage. It's The River Wild.
Okay.
And the person who was sort of iceberg famous before they were big is Michael C. Reilly.
Oh, really?
Because he's in it.
Was he Kevin Bacon's mate?
Kevin Bacon's side, yeah. And also, was famous, in it before they were famous, for that tiny, like, year when he was famous, before he was Benjamin Bratt.
Oh, right. Yeah, okay.
So he's in the canoe.
He probably had a bigger prologue to being famous than actually being famous.
So that tiny bit when he was famous, just before, and if he was in a film now, it would be just after. And, yeah, I love River Wild. It's great. It's got the annoying brat from Jurassic
always
Park.
Always on. It used to always be on bank holidays, but now they don't really put it on that much. So avoid the remake of The Wicker Man and watch Terry Gilliam's Brazil. I'm sure our, you know, very cine literate listeners have all seen Brazil, but if you haven't,
And an American audience, get
them
on DVDs.
Have, go and watch it again.
Yeah.
Talking of DVDs, it's time for us to go through the DVD top 10.
Yeah.
And there's a bit of a surprise in there. Number 10, Despicable Me. We were talking about it earlier.
And how average it
average.
Is.
Average.
Yeah.
Average.
Distinctly
3D
average.
Crappy animated fare. Number 9, 110th week in the chart.
It's Taken. It's back in.
It's Taken. If ever I was reminded of how awful Taken is this week, it was when I was watching a good film that shows how to make films like Taken, not like Taken.
It's not nice.
Number 8, Darren Aronofsky's Black Swan.
Yeah, still haven't seen it.
You still haven't seen it?
No.
Obviously great.
After my marathon on Saturday, I probably should have.
Yeah.
But I was just flicking.
Number 7, Inception, which is carrying on its renaissance in the top 10 continues after it fell spectacularly after being released. I still can't really figure out why. Mm. Number 6, Due Date.
Yeah.
The sort of sandwich in the filling in Todd Phillips'
the filling.
Zach Galifianakis sandwich.
Yeah.
Number 5, Gulliver's Travels, which came out on Christmas Day, so neither of us saw it. Number 4... the crusty bit of bread, this like, but the probably superior
the best
bit
part
of bread
of the Zach Galifianakis sandwich.
Yeah, it's very unlikely that the a part of the bread is going to be the best part of the sandwich. So maybe that's where the analogy falls
it's
down.
It's ciabatta.
But it's the hangover one.
Yeah, it's ciabatta. It's the hangover. Back in, obviously.
Number three is just go with it.
Just go with it. It's a new entry. And just, yeah, I...
We didn't. I can't remember whether I saw it. It wasn't a.
You're very lucky
forfeit,
not to see it. There was another
forfeit.
There must
have been something out that week that was worse.
Yeah. Well.
Number two, the King's Speech. Same as last week. That's going to be around for a while. And number one, still hanging in there. Tangled.
Great. Yeah.
They're quite good at doing this, Disney, because before a big DVD push, they always do a 3-for-2 on all Disney DVDs.
Yeah.
So when the new one comes out, they always sell millions and millions of them.
Yeah.
So well done, Disney.
Yeah. Yet again. You might. Up with prom though, didn't you? You idiots.
Okay. Well, it's time for us talking of awful films. Honey 2 is released this week
in cinemas.
So it's time to ring up the quizmaster and see which one of us is going to be seeing it.
Two men, one film. Who will see it? The quizmaster will decide.
Ooh, okay, so nerve-wracking. It's been very back and forth recently, hasn't it? I don't think either of us has had a two in a row for a while.
I think... Didn't I get two in a row?
No, I had the one before, and then you had the one before that, and I had the one before that.
Hello.
Ah, hello, Quizmaster. Quizzy. How are you doing?
Very well.
Good. Come on. The stakes are incredibly high this week, so make sure it's a good one.
Well... In Home Alone 2, lost in New York.
Yeah.
I think it's lost.
Keep the change, you filthy animal.
Lost
in New York it is, mate.
Okay, carry on.
Let him finish.
Kevin racks up a certain amount on his room service.
This is a fantastic question. I don't know the answer,
great.
But back on form, Mr. Quizmaster.
You want to know what that is, I'm guessing, and start now.
I want to know how much money he spends on himself.
Are you going to do it in lira or something? Weird. Okay. I'm going to go... You know, I know that they're quite wealthy, their family, so it would have to be quite a lot for that. For Bill Pullman. Who plays it? It's not Bill Pullman.
Peter McCallister.
Yeah, Peter McCallister.
Kevin! Houston! Somebody out of my car!
I don't think he's going to send what is on mine. Okay. Oh, your time's up.
Really? I haven't even started. You didn't say start.
I win.
No, you don't. You don't.
I said start 30 seconds ago.
I wrote it down.
Okay, well, I get an extra 10 points either way. £10, dollars. Okay, well, shall I read mine out first?
Yeah.
I've gone for $37,345.
You're miles off. I went 5,000.
5,000?
Yeah.
Okay, so, and I get 10 either way because of your cheating.
$10, yeah, go for it.
Okay, oh no. That's, how would he ever spend 37 grand? It's a ridiculous amount. Can we have a new question? Oh no.
Well, as Buzz announces, he spends $967.
Yeah, I didn't even think they said, I originally put 500 and I got scared and I put another nought.
Well.
Have that.
I'm
not 10,000 off, so I'm minus 5,000, and you're 27,000.
It was made 20 years ago. So.
I know, but they were really rich, and I'm really thick.
Stockbroker, money exchange market, Mr. Quizmaster.
Yeah, apparently he was responsible for the downfall of Merrill Lynch single handedly. But anyway, thanks very much, Quizmaster. Speak to you next week.
That's great news. Thank you.
Bye-bye. Right. Bye.
I mean, what an awful way to lose such a big one.
I know.
What was I thinking?
So far, 37. It's like, it's nearly as bad as my Gandhi guesstimate with the crowds.
Oh, no, that was pretty bad.
Yeah, but. Yeah. I mean, you know.
I think this is definitely my most shameful answer. On the week when the stakes were at the highest they've ever been. Sorry about that. Right, which brings us to the end of the show.
Yeah, but quick, I mean, obviously, just a recap, you will be watching Honey 2, the sequel to Jessica Alba's romp.
Yeah, although she's not in it this time.
Isn't it?
No, no.
Oh.
New actress. New rules. Maybe it'll be really good. Who knows? Might be a film of the year, surprise of the year. So any other business? Have you done anything this week?
No, well, the guy I live with, he's been on a work trip this week, and he's my sort of shadow line partner.
Oh, so you're waiting for it.
I've got to wait for the fourth.
It's a very good one.
It's the fourth?
No, the fifth now. There's two left.
Yeah, fifth and sixth.
We find some interesting developments regarding the identity of man in hat.
Oh, brilliant, because we need a bit of we need a bit of background info about him, don't we?
Yeah.
So all I'd like to say is I look forward to that. It'll be a double banger this weekend.
Anything else on telly you've enjoyed?
No.
Not really. I don't really watch much telly.
I don't watch much.
Luther's
Harold's back on Neighbours.
Oh, the ending of Doctor Who was brilliant.
Oh, really? It's a baby involved, is that right?
Something like that, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
It's not a plot spoiler because of the front of the Radio Times.
It's not.
And Harold's back on Neighbours. He's been away for a couple of years. He's back and he's got some people with him, some
crawling
daughters.
Back to Channel 5, like so many others.
Or Ian Smith, if you can use his actorial name.
That's very good. Mm. I know pretty much the whole cast of
Alan Fletcher.
Pre 2005 Neighbours.
Who's Alan Fletcher?
Everyone knows that, mate.
His Carl name. Kennedy.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, right. That other side, I thought you were talking about the character. Never mind, this is really boring. we're going to give you one last chance to listen to the accent quiz.
I know what Arthur's going to say. He's going to say, I gave you a chance. I put a brush in your hand. I went out on a limb for you, and you're going to toss it away to go and play bass.
Okay, so you think if you think you know that, or you want to hear it again, go to celluloidheroesradio.com/competition.
Little clue, it's not Four Weddings and a Funeral. If you think that those chimes in the background are a clue.
Yeah.
If anything, they probably deter you from the truth.
Exactly, yeah. So nothing left to do except to say thank you all very much for listening.
Yes.
And yeah, see you all next week. Although actually, before we go, next week we're going to be at Edinburgh Film Festival, so there will still be a show on Wednesday, but we're going up on Thursday, so we'll do a special show next week recorded live from Edinburgh. So if there's any films, all the programmes out, so if you go to the EIFF website and have a look at what's on, if there's a film that you think you would like reviewed, then we'll do the best we can.
We're only there for the weekend, we're not there for the whole
We've got viewing. 4 days, I'm there for.
You're there for 4 days, I'm there just Saturday, Sunday.
Yeah, that's a damn shame.
It's a damn shame, but I will get to see a couple of films.
Yeah, we'll have The Guard for you.
The Guard's
we were
a big
talking
one.
About earlier.
And there's some...
We'll try and see Trollhunter if we can as well. Trollhunter's being screened.
If we can,
so lots of exciting stuff. Who knows, you might get a few interviews along the way. But anyway, thank you for listening. See you all next week.
For all the latest movie news, for previous reviews, or to get in contact with the show, visit celluloidheroesradio.com.